I have with me on the phone Principal of Our Lady Immaculate Junior National School, Breda Murray. Breda, good afternoon and welcome to Northside Today.
Thanks very much.
You are welcome. Now, Minister Bruton has announced that he's going to tackle educational disadvantagement. Whoa, that's a lot to get out in one go. You were at the launch because he held it in your school. How is he going to do it?
Well, a lot of the details weren't exactly outlined that day, but he did talk generally about extra food provision for schools in areas like ours, because we didn't get the full percentage to provide lunches for children this year. We only got 90%. And then he also talked about giving extra support to children in our schools, because they do need that little bit of extra support if they're to be on a par with children in more advantaged areas. So they're talking about putting extra teachers into the system and hopefully keeping some of the supports that are in the system already, which would be smaller class sizes. But that wasn't really quite clear. We've been fighting for that for quite a while. You know, we have small numbers, and in about, say, 5 or 6 years ago, the government at the time under Rory Quinn tried to withdraw that. So we've been fighting ever since to keep those small numbers, because it makes a huge difference to the kids if they're in a smaller group. But there does seem to be a certain will to keep the initiatives that are there going and provide a few more supports, really. But he was also here to look at the initiatives in the schools, because a lot of schools were known as DESH schools, which stands for Delivering Equality of Opportunity in Schools. There's a lot of very good work going on. So he was interested in things like after-school clubs, which we have going here. You know, our children do after-schools twice a week. And on using the schools, really, for more of those kind of clubs, so that the children are exposed to a wide range of activities. And he was also looking at some of the projects we have going in literacy and maths. There's some quite innovative stuff going on here. And there would be a great interest in getting schools to cluster together and share things that are happening, that are going well, and that kind of thing. So I suppose it's a multifaceted approach. So he took quite a while going around the school. He visited some of the cookery room, saw children cooking. Then he went into one of the infant classrooms and saw a particular project there where the children learned to play for an hour a day. And then he went up to the first and second classes and he saw a maths project in operation and a literacy project. And he took plenty of time and he was very positive about the stuff he saw. So there definitely is an interest, and he asked very, you know, you could tell the questions he asked that he'd been informed and he was interested to really know in quite a bit of detail what was going on.
And Breda, do you find that since the recession hit, and I suppose we'll say 2008, 2009, do you find that you're running harder just to stand still? Because for those who don't know, Our Lady Immaculate Junior National School is up on the Malahide Road there, just in Darndale. And do you find that you're running harder to stand still? And then, I suppose the other side of it, Breda, is, and I don't wish to rain on your parade or on Minister Bruton's parade, but do you find that what he was announcing the other day, like you said, it was a little bit thin on detail, but do you find that he's really just sort of maybe putting back in place some of the things that were taken away as a result of the cutbacks?
I'd say there's an element of that, definitely, because a lot of things were taken away at the time. And there has been this sort of like stealth-like campaign to chip away at things slowly. Like, say, we would have had very significant grants to help children with the book grants, because a lot of our parents would struggle a lot financially. So that was cut severely. For years, we had a grant called a Minor Works Grant that was for the upkeep of the school. And they took that away. They brought it back in a few years ago. And then there was a grant to bring children out to trips or to bring musicians and artists and everything in, which our children might necessarily get in the summer. Maybe like other children might be brought to more places. But for our parents, for some of them, it isn't financially possible because, you know, entry fees into things and public transport and all the rest is costly. And if you're on social welfare. You just don't have the money for that kind of thing. So there used to be a grant, it was called an in-and-out grant, to bring people in and to bring them out. That was cut. We haven't had anything for IT for the last 4 or 5 years, even though, say, about 6 years ago, we were given grants to put in whiteboards into schools and things. And all that stuff was very costly to maintain. It's great to have it, but then you have to get maintenance contracts. All that money was cut until about 3 weeks ago. They gave a small grant per capita to do something with the IT for maintenance and that. So while they still gave the grant per head for per pupil, you know, the capitation grant, all these other supports were kind of gradually eked away. And the difference with us here is because our parents are under the pressure and under, they can't really fundraise. You know, in other schools, in more affluent areas, they would have big fundraisers or they'd have some sort of a
volunteer donation. Because quite obviously, Bree, there's only a certain pool of money to go around the entire community, and that's pretty limited before we ever start.
It is. So what we had to do here, like, you really would feel all those grants going. So you were down then to getting costs from the government that don't even cover the heat and electricity of the school. You know, it would barely make that and sometimes didn't by the time you take all the costs and phone and everything else that you have to take care of. So we would have really felt that. So what we did actually is we went and we made partnerships with corporate bodies because there were certain things we wanted to provide the children with, for example, the after-school clubs, which our kids, again, wouldn't be able to afford to pay tutors. So we looked for funding. The literacy project that we did, we needed funding to train up teachers and to provide resources. We looked for that as well. So the government would have put a certain amount to it. We would have gotten what was called a DESH grant towards that. But to do anything really significant, we had to go and source money ourselves. And that isn't right. It should all be provided. And that was mostly because of the amount that was cut over the last couple of years. Because if you take away the money for maintenance, the money for books, the money for trips, and a few other little grants that were taken away. And then there is this thing that they tried to, we had what was called extra posts, you know, because we were in a DESH school, and you hear them now called legacy posts. So we were given extra staffing so that our children could be in smaller class sizes to give them that extra help and that extra chance. And then there was a campaign of the last couple of years to try and say, oh, we're suppressing these posts now, you know, and we had to fight again to keep that. So there has been a lot of things kind of under the surface. So I suppose people in DESH schools, I mean, we're very open to working with whatever government is there to keep the initiatives going and have the best possible teaching and education here for our children. But we do need more resources. I mean, you know, it needs to be prioritised because, I mean, I think all children deserve that. But the difference between our children and children in more affluent areas is if we don't provide it, they don't get it. And that's not the same for in other areas because the parents are the lucky situation that they can provide a certain amount. They shouldn't be under too much pressure either, but they do have that extra bit that they can contribute towards the school that our parents wouldn't necessarily have, you know?
Yeah, and of course, that therein lies the commencement, I suppose, of the lopsidedness going right through, because that carries through then into second level and third level. And, you know, that's a whole discussion for another day, Breeda, but we have seen the statistics about, we'll say, for want of a better word, sort of deprived areas and, you know, or underprivileged areas, whatever tag you want to apply, the going forward, the percentage from those areas that actually go on to university, like, it really, it's very stark when you see it in written down in figures. And I presume, Breed, that your contention would be that it all starts with your national school.
Oh, yeah, I was at a meeting recently where we were looking at trying to provide a Centre for Lifelong Learning here. It was the European initiative that we were getting involved in, and the statistics were frightening about the amount of people in the double 17 area, particularly here in Darnton and Priorswood. It was way below the national average. You know, I think it was only something like 3 or 4% of people go to third level. So it has to start very young, and all the research would, this is actually, we were looking at who entered the teaching profession. You know, it was very, very small. It would be higher now for across the board third level. So we were looking at how could we support people who wanted to do that. But all the research would show early intervention is the most effective. That comes out again and again because, you know, with early intervention, you're preventing problems, whereas on the other side, there's this huge amount going into solving problems that are probably deeply entrenched at that stage. So I think that that's one thing we will be very aware of, that we need to start looking younger and younger. There's a initiative out in our area now called Preparing for Life, and that targets women from pregnancy right onto the child enters school and up to six, giving different supports with nutrition, with literacy in the home, with a family support worker going in, talking about parenting, linking them in, linking into the maternity hospitals, making sure they attend the classes and that. And that's shown to have really positive impacts. And then those children come to school and they are more ready for school. They're more able, they're more independent. So that sets them off on a great, but they need support the whole way along. But as I say, the researchers show the greater the support in the early years, the more successful the outcome. And whereas I think in this country, we're inclined to wait till the problem emerges and then, oh my God, what are we going to do? And a huge amount of resources go into managing the problem instead of preventing the problem in the first place and supporting people along so that they do reach their full potential.
A quick question for you before I let you go, Breda, because I do appreciate that you're under pressure there. How many students do you have and how many teachers have you?
Well, we're in a very unusual little pocket. There's 34 schools in the country that are junior schools, which would be, you know, the junior infants, the second, who were given a status in 1996 under this Breaking the Cycle initiative. And we were allowed to have 15 children to one teacher. Now, in all other junior schools and deaf schools, that would be 20 to 1. And then the senior schools, it goes up a bit higher to 22 to 1 and sometimes 24 to 1. So we're in this unusual little pocket because the government at the time, and also there was a lot of money around in 1996, they actually made a very positive gesture towards the, putting in extra supports with the young children. And they said, let's try this in 34 schools and see what happens. So we're one of those. So that lasted for 10 years. So at the end of the 10 years, of course, times had begun to shift financially and everything. So they did say, we leave it at the schools that have it, but we won't extend it. So we're actually, it's great to have that. And we have to fight for it. We were out with the DESH campaign about 6 years ago on the streets because they, you know, Rory Quinn at the time suddenly announced he was abolishing all these 15 to 1, 20 to 1. He was going to make everybody 22 to 1, which would have been disastrous for our school. We would have lost 4 to 5 staff overnight and the classes were totally shifted. We can see the real difference having 15 to 1. You get to know each child so well. You can and they have huge needs, so you can actually address the needs and you can give them the supports they need. So for us, that's great. But we'd be unusual in that. I'd say most deaf schools in the junior end, you'd be talking about 20 to 22, that kind of way, which still is a lot less than, say, I'm sure you know of schools in middle-class areas or educate-together schools, different things, they'd be up into almost 30 to 1 or in the mid-20s, do you know? So we're hoping to hold on to that because that has made a huge difference. Our children will get lost if the classes get much bigger. A certain percentage will, because we won't have the personnel to cope with all the needs they come with, you know?
Well, Breda, you're doing an absolutely fantastic job, and on behalf of everybody, can I thank you, because it really sounds as though you're driven in doing what you're doing, and well done, and long and continued success to you and your teachers up there in Our Lady Immaculate. Breda, thank you so much for joining us on Northside today.
Not at all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Now, that was Breda Murray up in Our Lady Immaculate Junior National School, just up there in Darndale. Now,